Peggy.
5B.
5B.
Yeah, hold on, you have to do that again. You weren't, we aren't on.
That's what I was thinking.
You gotta do it again. Open the meeting.
Oh. We're back in session and we're gonna be going to 5B, I believe.
Correct.
Actually, we're going to 6B.
No.
Wait a second.
5B.
5B is the one we voted in.
Brian.
I even forgot what it is. Okay. A discussion regarding camping on the City Hall campus and abandoned vehicles.
Ryan.
So over the last 2 weeks, I've come into City Hall a number of times, spent some quality time with staff and getting some help from IT specifically.
Yep, they always enjoy that, so.
And they always enjoy me coming in here. Especially David. So I have had the experience that there have been a number of individuals getting out of the rain, which I appreciate, but the manner in which that's being done, it needs some intervention. Let's see, on Monday, I came into the front doors here and there was a gentleman who had urinated on himself and was wearing ripped pants and his personal belongings and food garbage was all over the front of City Hall, it was blowing around. And I asked staff to maybe see if we could get a trash can or some sort of other containment and he was incoherent at the time. That's happened two of the last 3 times I've come in the front door, that's been the case, 2 different individuals. And so I guess that's obviously not 100% within our sphere of influence, but that is a bad look. It puts people with business with the city at ill ease and staff probably don't appreciate that either. So I'm just putting that out there, that was my experience. And can we work towards some sort of resolution with that issue of people specifically at the door? And then generally citywide about inoperable vehicles. If there aren't financial resources for the owner of that vehicle, where does that sit with current city policy and police interactions with, if they're called to such a situation, I guess we're trying to figure out what are the best practices?
Yeah, I think on the first question, as far as the people, you know, resting or being in the entryway of City Hall.
You're not resting, Spencer.
Okay. Let me finish this. And actually, a number of them are resting, you know.
Sleeping.
Is it appropriate? You know, that's the million dollar question here. And one of the things that we have to do is we have to get our ordinance in shape. Because right now, we have, the police have very limited authority to address issues. Now, if they're physically blocking the entire doorway, we can have them move their stuff so that they're there. But if you can physically access it, it's our opinion at this point, based on the ordinances that we have, and that's why we brought this issue to you before, that we are very limited in dealing with folks in a legal fashion by not allowing them to stand or rest in the entryway as long as they aren't blocking the door. Now, if they're smoking, if they're littering, you know, things like that, we can address. The way we address it isn't the easiest thing because we can issue them a citation, which isn't gonna get paid. But, you know, that's something we can do. We need to really focus on this camping ordinance because we heard it tonight on the parking lot. You know, this is a problem that is starting to impact a lot more people and we need to have some rational rules that we can enforce as a city to manage this issue as best we can in a humanitarian way. But right now, it's a wide open book on what people can do. And so that's, you know, in my opinion, it's extremely critical that we, you know, we got input from the council who, you guys weren't very happy with what we came up with on parts of it. Some of it was okay. We're taking that back. We're trying to revamp that. But at some point, we've gotta adopt rules that are enforceable. And that's going to be our best protection against any potential claims of harassment or other activity that are very viable claims. And there's a lot of people that are willing to take steps to enforce those issues. On the vehicle issue, that's another problematic area, and we are really trying to figure out how to best handle that, because we can require a vehicle be moved, you know, if it stays in a spot for 72 hours. But now the big question, because of the federal court ruling that was in Washington State, I think, Lacey, if someone's living in the vehicle, we can't tow that vehicle. And so, I mean, this stuff is really, really challenging. And we've got to figure out the options that we have. Now, the League of Oregon Cities is trying to develop a model ordinance, and they're using CIS, they're using a variety of sources in order to help communities out on these issues. But we're really in a historically unprecedented time where the things that we would normally do, we can't do right now until we get some things in place, you know, from an ordinance. And David can speak a little further on that.
You know, one thing we can't do, which I think we heard tonight, is, you know, we have to listen to all the perspectives. At the last meeting, we heard from the homeless community. Now we're hearing from the business community. And they each have their points to make that are valid points. There's no right or wrong on this issue. It's trying to find a pathway forward to address as many of the issues as possible. It's not going to be perfect. We're not going to make everyone happy, but we have to come to some reasonable solution, and that's really the difficult, challenging part about all this. And that's really where the outreach and the engagement and these discussions with the community is important, because we have to fashion something that actually tries to incorporate all these different perspectives as best we can, that is also legally defensible.
Well, hang on. So to a couple points, I will agree with David and Spencer what they said, but I don't think it's reasonable or defensible to have to step over someone who's passed out from substance abuse in the front door of City Hall, a city we're all serving as a volunteer. That is not reasonable.
I agree.
Not in any shape or form. And Brett Hewlett's customers and the salon's customers have the right to have free passage to and from their businesses without the interference they've mentioned tonight. I just want to make sure that's on the record.
Yep. No, so, and on that, I agree wholeheartedly. And if someone is blocking that door, we have them move. And this, the tolerance that people have varies a lot from individual to individual. You know, as was mentioned, tonight, you know, some people are just concerned about being around folks that are, you know, obviously homeless. There are some legitimate concerns, you know, with some of the mental health issues that are going on with some of these folks as well. And that's truly, I mean, we get concerned about it here at City Hall. We have people that are on the lawn of City Hall that are yelling and screaming, and not at anybody in particular, just, you know, they're, we have a lot of mentally ill people that are in this core area that we deal with as employees of the city as well. But if someone is physically, if you have to step over somebody, that's a problem, and that's a problem that we can resolve. If someone is just off to the side, that's where, until we get something cleaner on the books. Right.
I agree with you.
Right.
Exactly.
Is there anything we can do to put a barrier up in there?
Yeah, we had to do that. We did that in the rec center, on the entranceways across from the residences there. We're gonna take a look at it because nobody likes this situation.
See the entrance to City Hall. I mean, what a place to camp out. But
right.
I mean, I don't have any problem going through there, but I'm sure there's some people that do. You know, they would be terrified to go through there.
Well, and one of the standards in the new state law and that was incorporated in the based on the federal court rulings is, you know, and we heard this at the last meeting, the perspective of what's fair from a law standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint is, you know, looking at it from the perspective of the homeless person. So that's one of the key considerations. It's not just that someone's afraid to walk by someone that's homeless. It's really kind of what is their perspective on being homeless in that mix. And you know, I wish I had the answers to this, because I'd like to resolve it like tomorrow. We're gonna do the best job we can finding a mix that's going to provide more regulation than we currently have, but still is fair to folks that are homeless.
Yeah, so the state law, which isn't gonna take effect till next year, it gives us time, which is trying to incorporate the federal decisions. We're waiting to get some guidance from the League of Oregon Cities on some model ordinance, but the language, as I mentioned last meeting, the language in that state law, which will take effect eventually, is to look at what's objectively reasonable as to time, place, and manner, and looking at it from the totality of the circumstances, including the perspective of someone who's homeless. That's not the entire perspective, but it's a large part of it. So again, that gets back to what I just said earlier, the outreach to all the different affected communities, whether it's business, homeless, residents, that is really what we need to incorporate to get that picture of what would be objectively reasonable, whatever we adopt. And that really requires input from the community. Mm-hmm. We up here aren't able to do that. We need to hear from the community's perspective before we can adopt something. And that's a lot of time and work, but it's critical we do it as quickly as possible within the time frames and the process we have in place right now.
I want to follow up on your comment. And I think, you know, one of the things is how we can help as a council, you know, city council, to approach the community and engage, you know, the community at large instead of being frustrated, you know, because we are not going to fix problems being sitting here and not getting frustrated, but how we can approach the community and start talking about this and say, you know, here, I want to hear from you some strategies. Maybe you can help us, you know, to figure out. Because I think that's I can see that, how important is that.
Dan?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, David. We're all frustrated. And when you're frustrated, you want to say, well, let's do that. And that ain't going to solve it. This is a multimodal problem that when you push on one end, it comes out the other, and it comes out twice, and then you get more pushback. And it's been a challenge for years. And I feel like we're not going to solve it sitting up here. And you get hooked into, well, I'm trying to address this person or that person's concern, but that really doesn't solve it. I know that there was work done years ago, and there was a homeless coalition of some that I don't know where that still stands. I think that basically the way that any solutions to this is going to require collaboration. It's going to, what's the county doing? What's the school district? You know, so that you have some resources, and that we can hope maybe tag into that, reach out to that, and then have. Because it's going to take a whole community to come up with something, and nobody's ever going to all agree.
Yeah, you know, reaching an end result is where your goal is, but really the hard part is putting in a process that allows you to reach that end result, whatever it may be. And you don't know what that end result is until you go through that engagement and outreach process. That will determine what the ultimate result is that hopefully has buy-in from a majority of the community.
Right, and I think you don't get the buy-in if people, and it takes some skilled facilitation, because you can just get into people yelling at each other.
Yeah, the one thing I found encouraging tonight was from the comments from the folks that were here. There were a number of constructive ideas.
Yes,
that came out, because oftentimes it's just, you know, it's an unrealistic expectation that this is just going to disappear, and that's not going to happen. But I really was encouraged by some of the very specific thoughts that folks were sharing on this issue, knowing that it's going to be here, but how do we manage it better?
Yeah. Emar?
So we're not going to solve it tonight, Spencer.
we solve it.
Could you come back to us on maybe the next meeting and give us some?
It's not going to be the next meeting, because the meeting that we set up, and I'm going to invite some of the folks that were here on the parking lot to that meeting. It's going to be a staff meeting, which is...
I'm not talking about the whole city. I'm just talking about what we're talking about tonight.
City Hall. It's really folded all together in a solution on the camping issue in the city, because there's just not much other than dealing with someone physically blocking that door that we can do right now. until we get our ordinances legal on where people can rest in camp.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan, you raised two very valid issues. On the issue regarding the entrance to City Hall, if someone's off to the side and, you know, there's access into City Hall, that really puts us in a difficult position. If they're impeding the entrance, then we have the ability to open up that entrance and, you know, ask them to move to the side and allow people to access City Hall during the working hours. On the issue with parking and the 72-hour issue and towing and someone actually living in the vehicle, the police chief has made it really clear that's not something that they can do under the current ordinance, and it's something that they may have to take a further look at once we put something more, a better framework in place. But I'll let the police chief, when he's back here, you know, at the next meeting, speak to that, because that's really more of his issue, even though it's folded into this overall homeless and camping ordinance discussion.
So on that, I think what I'm looking for next winter in that legislative session is guidance on to what point can someone operate a vehicle with no insurance, no maintenance, and putting the community at risk when that vehicle operates on our roadways. That is also an elephant in the room that hasn't been addressed at the scale that it needs to be addressed.
Right.
So there's that as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm really glad that I came up with this agenda item, and I appreciate everyone's feedback, and I think we could maybe move on if the mayor would green light that.
Jan?
I think I'd like to be invited to that meeting that you plan to hold with the folks from the parking, but I think we need to do that. We need to, there's a lot of work that needs to be done around this, and if we can stimulate some of that or participate in other people's attempts to do something, because we can write the ordinance, but then we have trouble enforcing things here because we don't have enough police. So you get that one step, but then, okay, it would feel better at least if we know what we weren't enforcing, but the next step is how do we actually do it and what's the best way to do it? So I think, obviously, we need to get the ordinances done. I share your, I've been here several times, and it's like, you know, I got to step over this guy, and it doesn't smell good, and I can imagine, you know, for some people that would turn away. It's just, it would be scary, you know,
Jan, to your earlier point, I think what caused the problem is we've ignored this way too long. We've ignored the homeless way too long, and we keep pushing them off in the corner.
Yeah.
And the problem keeps getting worse. And, you know, we can't put them all in jail. There's not enough room in jail,
right,
obviously. And to David's point about the legal stuff, it seems like whenever we come up with an ordinance, the courts say no. And so that's a minefield in and of itself, trying to, it's an obstacle course, trying, yes, to figure out, you know, we want to do something, and then all of a sudden the court says, no, you can't, and with the new Lacey decision kind of makes it harder. And no matter what we do, the court's probably going to come up with something to block whatever we do.
Yes.
I think that, to Dietmar's point, yeah, we can do a lot of construction. We can, a lot of these people like the alcoves, like at the senior center, mm-hmm, and here, and we could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars blocking off these alcoves.
Or we could build a big alcove.
Unfortunately, all the money would go to architects.
That's right. Right.
So
it's a big fee. Right.
And you know,
I have drawings.
You know, Ryan was talking about the front door. I want to talk about the back door. Yeah. I always come in the back door, and it's just as bad. And
the code is 1234.
Yeah. So, I mean, the other day I tried to get in and I couldn't. There's a gal back there that had everything spread out, and I asked her to please move some stuff so I could get by. And then tonight when I came in, a guy was smoking there. And I said, you know, there's a state law that says you can't smoke within 10 feet of a doorway. And I asked him to please move on. And I can't tell you what he said. I wouldn't repeat it in public. But anyway,
you didn't get immediate buy-in. Thinking about putting, you know, something someplace.
I think, well, the bigger problem for me is it's just every time we try to come up with some reasonable solution, the courts or the state legislature says no. And it's just really frustrating when we're here down on the bottom end trying to get stuff done and they do that. But to Ryan's point about the front door, I think that perhaps Sergeant Lee could deputize you as a junior police officer.
Cool. Oh, you got a sticker? All right.
Anyway, it's
a good idea.
You know, I mean, we've had a lot of decent problems tonight. You know, with noise and camping and all that. And it's just not easy. I've said that probably 12 times tonight.
Yeah. You know, and some of this is getting back to normalcy.
Yeah, but it's super frustrating because we want to do something. We want to help these people. We want to help the public at large. And, you know, it's just frustrating when we can't.
Yeah, no, I think that's honest. I think we need to find a way to put some serious energy towards this. Did you have anything further, Ryan? I'd like to participate in that.
I do not.
Okay.
Let's go on.
So we can move on. All right, Peggy, next item.
Well, this is PM. Can I just add one thing? Hi, I want to clarify the mayor's comments. I don't think putting folks in jail is the answer, even if we had the room. So I just wanted to clarify. I hope that's not what you meant. So I wanted to clarify that comment.
Oh, no, I was just saying that, you know, if people want these homeless people jailed, there's no room in jail to do that. And you're right, to your point, it is not the place for them anyway. Okay, Peggy.
All right, the next item on the agenda is approval of a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs regarding support from the City of Newport Police Department for the Veterans Affairs Office.
Spencer.
This MOU is an updated MOU that we approved earlier, and I would recommend the council do this. This is for the Veterans Office in the 1010 building, and it's a protocol with the VA police to have agreements with local law enforcement because the federal folks actually have jurisdiction in that leased space. So,
Ryan,
go ahead. Anyone have any concerns?
No, go ahead.
I'll move to approve a memorandum of understanding with the Veterans Administration Police and the Newport Police Department and authorize the police chief to execute the memorandum of understanding.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Councilor Parker, seconded by Councilor Gobler. All those in favor?
Gobler.
Did I say that? It's getting late.
I didn't even say anything.
Aye.
I didn't. Jan said second.
Oh, Jan did? Okay. All right. Motion made by Councilor Parker, seconded by Councilor Kaplan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, motion carries. And with that,
No. She voted twice, actually.
Yeah, Gobler.
Gobler, yeah. I think that was that sandwich I had at lunch.
That must have been.
I'd like to open the contractor review board. Peggy, next item.
Okay, the next item is notice of intent to award an audit services contract with Aldrich CPAs and Advisors LLP.
Spencer.
The city previously awarded a contract to Marina and Company to prepare the city's annual audit. Marina and Company, after the second year of a three-year commitment, indicated they would no longer be doing our municipal audit. As a result, the audit committee recommended that we proceed with proposals to retain a new auditing firm for the city. This is a very late time period in which to request an audit, so we were very concerned about what we would end up with here. We did receive one proposal. It was very loud. We did receive one proposal from the company of Aldrich CPAs and Advisors LLP, and that proposal is has a number of people that will be working with us on the audit, including the lead auditor, who would be Jessica Luther Haynes. And if you may remember, before, Jessica was a lead auditor for Bolt, Carlisle, and Smith, and she's very familiar with the city of Newport, and we were thrilled to death that she is working now for this company that apparently is willing to do our audit. So this was the only proposal that we received. And so the recommendation would be to go and authorize a notice of intent to proceed with Aldrich CPAs and Advisors LLP. The one thing that has happened is the cost has gone up fairly significantly. That's something that we were expecting. And so the first year cost will be $63,375. This year's audit was $52,600. So So again, a substantial increase in cost. There are just not auditors. A lot of, because they can't find employees, a lot of the auditing firms are getting out of municipal auditing. And so, you know, like I said, we're fortunate to have this proposal. And Steve, anything else to add to this?
No, I think you covered it pretty well.
So Steve, how many stars would you give this auditor out of five, would you say?
I'd give her a four.
Solid B minus, okay. My confidence is reinvigorated.
That's a B, not a B minus.
So both Cynthia and I were at the interviews for these people, and I was highly impressed with the audit firm, and it's a old-time firm. It's been around a long time, and they have offices got all over creation. So they're not a small company. They have a big base to pull from. And I was really impressed with Jessica. She came, I think she just started with the company about a year ago or something.
Yeah, she just came over to the company.
And she was very familiar with our books and our system. And I think, personally, I would give her a 5-star rating.
Me too.
You know. I'd they slap checked, Steve
they
around
checked
a
all
bit
my
with
boxes.
That four star. I would definitely support hiring her. So, Cynthia, David? You might have something different to say.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, David. Yes, I'm on the audit committee also, and I was at the interview. Jan also. I felt very confident with her and the firm, and I have no problems hiring them, even though they were the only applicant. I think they're going to do a good job.
Yeah,
very confident.
As I said, they checked all my boxes. One, but I wasn't here at the last audit, but I know I've heard really good things about her. She clearly knew what a municipal audit. She knew what municipal audits were. She had some passion for doing them, and she knew us, which is a big leg up, having been through types of audits where the first year is like nobody knows what they're talking about. The company impressed me largely. One of the things that they ticked off, because we were worried about continuity. What if somebody leaves? They're a big company. They seem to be able to pull teams. Both they have a big Salem presence. I think we're like 20 some odd people working in Salem. But they also have people all over the place, and they pull teams together for whatever the task is. And so that felt to me that we could rely that if we start, and things happen, somebody leaves or, you know, that they would be able to pull the team together to do it.
She'd be a good lead, yeah.
So I came away with, like, all questions answered. And
they said they usually didn't do city audits anymore. The Salem office didn't. But because of Jessica, they were pursuing.
Right, so this is the Salem office is new now to municipal audits.
Yeah.
They historically haven't done them out of the Salem office, but they have other offices in the West Coast.
David?
Yeah, so going way back into history, when I was actually on the council and an audit committee member, and I chaired the audit committee for several years, and Jessica was the lead auditor for Bull Carlisle Smith, so I got to know her very well when they were doing the audits for several years. And when I read that Jessica was doing the audits for this new firm, I mean, I couldn't think of anyone better, because I was impressed with her over the years in which I was on the audit committee. She was very open and she was very receptive to the audit committee and their questions. So I think even though it's a different firm, it's the same person, and I thought she did an excellent job while she was working for the other firm previously.
I'll make a motion.
Yes, Steve had
something to say.
Oh, Steve, it's got something to say. Are you going to change your rating to a 5-star?
No, I definitely think she's a 4 or 5. So. Yeah.
It'd be important for Steve to rate our last auditor. So
right. Dimar has a motion.
Okay, I'll move.
Dimar has a motion.
Okay, I'll move.
I did want to say something else too. I was impressed with the Aldrich, because they also offer a lot of help in the area of technology, which we definitely need some help in that area also.
And they seem to offer some kinds of training as well.
Yeah. Okay. Go for it.
I move to issue a notice of intent to award the annual city audit to Aldrich CPAs and advisors LLP for a three-year period with 2 one-year extensions in the amount of $63,375 for the first fiscal year ending June 30, 2022, in accordance with the rate schedule submitted with the proposal. And if no protest after 7 days, authorize the city manager to execute a contract subject to review by the city attorney.
I'll second that.
Motion made by Councilor Goble, seconded by Councilor Jacoby. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Hearing none, motion carries. Close the contract review board. We'll move on to public comment. I see none. And now we'll move on to council comments.
I have some.
Go ahead.
Sorry for jumping the queue.
I have a compliment first. Let's start with the good stuff. I wanted to compliment Ann Armstrong and the staff of Camp Gray at Almsey over there for setting a really good example as landowner mitigation of invasive plants on their property. They've done a great job with their Scott's broom, and I reached out to them a couple years ago and did some demos of some of the stuff I do at work, and I went by there today, and it's night and day compared to their next-door neighbor. So well done, Ann, and your team at Almsey. Props and kudos for that. I'd like to be excused from the June 13th meeting, so that's one thing.
June 13th isn't a meeting.
Oh, it isn't?
No, it'd be June the first
meeting. But we're not going to do the second meeting.
No, June has two meetings. So it's the 6th and the 20th.
Okay, then the 20th.
Okay.
So there's...
Checking to see if you got your calendar.
So there's that. You can do a motion at the end of my little spiel here. Just circling back, Spencer, the IPM final draft is coming this summer. Is that where we're at with that?
Yeah, I think now that we've got our staffing in much better shape in parks maintenance, that should be the case. So
I'm writing summer. 60-plus door thing was already installed? The thing?
It was installed.
Okay. All right. There's been some sand intrusion, as usual, at the Night Beach turnaround. Somebody asked me about it. I wouldn't say it's all that bad right now, but as the north winds kick up for the summer, maybe streets could, maybe hit that once a month or so. But my main thing I wanted to say was, and I think Dietmar's mentioned this too, is the school striping at 7th and Avery is a little worse for wear. I know the streets crew is having some staffing trouble, but if we could have those crosswalks restriped, it'd even be worthwhile to do it now, even though the school year is almost over. I think it'd be better for safety.
Okay.
That was what I had.
You don't listen to me, huh?
Oh, and golf course drive. that's what I had. So I guess I'll really be hoping for a motion, excuse me, from the 20th. Pending outcome with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Japanese government, I hope to be visiting family on that date.
Great. I will make a motion to excuse Councillor Parker from the June 20th meeting.
Second.
Motion?
She motioned. I second.
Jan seconded.
And Councillor Goldberg was ready.
Second by Councillor Kaplan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Oh, delayed. Okay, motion carries. Anybody else have comments? Cynthia?
Yes, I would like to make a few comments on the local public safety council advisory that I went to last Friday. Jan was there too. Yeah. Sue Graves with Lincoln County School District said that they've been having an unusually high amount of student disruption and bad behaviors this year, and they are not sure why. There could be a variety of reasons that we could all think of, but she said she wanted to reinforce the need for the school resource officer. And I hope we can bring the police force up enough in personnel that we can provide that for the schools. It is an important thing, and I am going to ask that we have a work session on that at some point when there's room on our schedule. They would like to come and talk to us about just what the resource officer does and a couple other issues with the schools and the safety of the children in our community. And Sheriff Landers was addressing the issue of people who commit crimes not being arrested and placed in jail. And he said, I believe there is a directive from the state of Oregon, I think it's a directive, that there is a group of crimes which are essentially nonviolent. And those that group contains three types, theft, drugs, and driving. And he said they will talk to the people, but they can't arrest them and put them in jail. For one reason, it's discouraged by the state, and also they are lacking beds at the jail. Pre-COVID, they had about 160 beds, and now, because of COVID and OSHA restrictions still in place, they are down about 35 beds because they have to single bunk people. So it was just interesting to know that. Did I say that correctly, Jan, from your recollection?
Yeah, I think so. That was the challenge, and is that the jail, again, these regulations that were put in place for jails around COVID haven't relaxed yet. So that they basically, if they take somebody, they're at a point where if they put somebody in jail, they got to let somebody out. And so that's resulting in more people that the people they're letting go come back and commit other crimes and then come back and then commit other. And by the time they get to the place of court, they're getting sent to prison. And so that the county's getting dinged and possibly losing funding because we're sending too many people to prison. But one of the things that the sheriff said is that a number of other counties have just they're not processing cases. So that's not that they've got less crime; it's that the attempt to keep up with things is resulting in judges who now are facing somebody who had a first felony. By the time they get to the judge, it's three felonies and it's mandatory. Or I may be missing out on the numbers, but that's kind of the situation. So it's, you know, and plus they're having to release people who there are or shouldn't, you know, there's no consequence, so they go right back out. It was pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
I think I've done a little reading on nationally the issue of kids are just having a heck of a time.
Uh-huh.
Anxiety and depression and suicides and violence. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, the kids are most affected by the COVID. You know, the 2 years of normalcy for me is like, well, that's, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. I'm 72. If you're 12, that was, you know, 20% of your life. And so the kids having to readjust into other kids, it's a real, so they're having a real problem.
It's been an interesting committee to attend, I must say.
Mm-hmm. Emar?
So just one thing on the brief. I attended a meeting with the school board and the superintendent's assistant superintendent and several other dignitaries, state representatives and so forth. And Spencer was there also. And it was quite a learning session. The school board presented what they want to do and how they want to go about things and what's happening in the schools. And like you said, there's a lot of angst about among the board about what to do and what not to do. And but one of the things that did come up, and I talked to Spencer about it afterwards with the safety officer, and Sue did say that they had more money available than the $45,000, and that's very possible they could totally fund that position. Now, Spencer told me that, well, the problem is trying to find somebody. So, and then I got to chatting with Spencer in the parking lot afterwards, and he says, does a position actually have to be a police officer? Can it be a resource officer, some kind of other? Does it have to be a commission or a full-fledged police officer? So I don't know where you were with that, and maybe you want to say something about that.
Yeah, I think that's a concept that's never really been discussed with the SRO program. And that would, you know, if we do have a schedule a work session coming up to discuss, you know, some of the logistics of what would have to happen before we could provide a person for that thing. I think that's certainly an appropriate thing to learn from. Typically, it's been a full uniformed police officer that does it. Does it have to be that way? I don't know. You know, it would have to be someone tied to the department so that that information could be relayed. But
I mean, does a person have to pack a gun and taser and all that and be an enforcement officer? Can it be a resource officer?
Right. You know? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if that model is used in any departments or not, but we can certainly.
I mean, they could still be attached to the police department.
Right. So we'll see what we can find out on that.
Okay, thanks.
Just the other thing, too, that we talked about after that meeting, the format the schools used for this meeting was really a very good format, and Dietmar and I talked about maybe the city needs to replicate that sort of a format as well, because it was a combination of presentation where each of the school board members made a specific presentation of their priority and their goals as a school district. But then they actually had an interactive part at each table facilitated by one of the school board members to draw out some specific information from the people at that table. And they collected that information. But it might be something we might want to try to do as well, to, you know, kind of solicit some very good information, I think, and share good information with people in the community. And typically when you buy dinner, it helps get people there. So
yeah. The Subway. The school district did, they bought the dinner, yeah.
Yeah.
It was at the at that.
And Ryan, it wasn't Subway either, so
I'm just basing that on the last school board meeting I went to. They had Subway. So.
they treated us a little better. So,
I'd like to thank Councillor Parker and the Atonement Lutheran Church. Saturday they had an electric vehicle display, and there was how many cars there? 30, 40?
That's probably about 40 different ones.
Yeah, and
from
Councillor Parker,
all makes and models.
Councillor Parker brought his car, and we were able to see that he had a couple of McDonald's cups in the back, and but anyway, it was wonderful. There's some cars there I didn't even know existed, and the Mustang was real impressive as far as the speed is concerned. It's really, but the price was kind of high, and then I was able to sit in a $100,000 Tesla, and they wouldn't let me drive it. But it was a great event, and there was a lot of people there. Everybody was having fun. We were all learning about. What I liked about it was the owners were there, and we were able to talk to the owner and say, what's your experience with this? And some of those people have had electric vehicles for many years. So.
The story starts at 2 a.m. at Jacksonville next to the Texaco. I will say that I was hoping that Elon Musk would do the right thing with his company and make Teslas more affordable for workforce everyday people like myself. Instead, he bought Twitter, but maybe tomorrow.
Brian, I have a question. How many stops did you have to make from here to Hermiston?
I did my research, and I took my CRV because the charger in Arlington is offline, so I was... It was going to be four, though.
All right.
I did like.
Oh, CM?
Yeah. I have to go. I'm so sorry. Can I please be excused? I just got to get ready for leaving tomorrow.
See ya.
Have a great evening. Bye. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay.
Thank you. Have fun. And I was going to say the Kia was a pretty sharp looking vehicle out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun being there, and I think Ryan, you must have left before.
I was there in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was a nice event.
What's happening with the EV charger in our parking lot, with the campers?
Our EV chargers came today. Yeah. So, the ones that we're installing, so they came off a big truck and they're stored in the back of City Hall here, but. Yeah, I'm not sure what the status of the state's charging system is there.
Wait, the one on 9th?
At Herbert.
Yeah, they've replaced it with a new one. So it's one or the other, though. The ODOT specs don't allow you to use both plugs at once. My opinion is that's an oversight in the contract, but I didn't sign it.
Okay, with that, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
Did they replace it, or did they?
Okay. None of those guys were
okay. Peggy, was I off on the price of your Tesla? Well, I saw your reaction.
Thank you, Sergeant Leak. Have a great evening.